GAA on Off the Ball. Now, welcome back. David Brady in studio. We'll be joined in a few moments by three-time All-Ireland winner with Tyrone Ender McGinley. We will start with some of the football action before getting the lads' thoughts on Motion 39, shot down, i.e. Dublin not playing two games at Croke Park in the Super 8s, but we'll start with the action on the pitch firstly. So in Division 1, we'll get to Dublin Mayo in just a second, a 112-7 points win for Dublin. Tyrone got things moving with a win over Monaghan. Kerry beat Galway in Division 2. Cork in a bit of relegation bother at the moment. Meath 2-12 to Cork's 1-9. And we should mention Leitrim as well. Four wins from four in Division 4 for Leitrim. But it was Dublin Mayo, which obviously people were paying close attention to on Saturday. 1-12 Dublin, 7 points Mayo. James Horne afterwards disappointed, as you'll hear here, with his attack and also some of the refereeing decisions.
We had 18 or so attacks in the first half, and we gave 11 turnovers out of 18. So it doesn't matter who you're playing. If you play like we played or like we started tonight, you'll get beaten. You know, so Dublin on the opposite side were very good. They were physical, bullied us a little bit, and that was simple as that. We got what we deserved. We're probably lucky we didn't get beaten by more.
Well, absolutely, I thought it was a black card. You know, I thought. Look, we were off in the first half in particular. I thought a lot of decision went against us as well. We missed a penalty, and I thought it was a black card for the penalty as well, but we didn't get it, but Dublin got two. So that's all that kind of stuff all adds up. So we were off, we weren't great. I thought we didn't get a few things either, so comprehensive beating.
Yeah, that's Johnny Cooper he's talking about there at the end. He reckons should have received the black card for the pull down. Ref booked him instead. What do you think, David?
From where I was sitting, I was kind of parallel to it, undecided. Like, it wasn't, for me, it wasn't a clear black.
Okay.
Now you could, 50, one ref would, the other wouldn't, and to say it as it was a clear foul. But as if to describe it as the black card, it was definitely on the periphery to a degree.
Horan's certainly not making excuses, because elsewhere he said, we just weren't good tonight in any category that you want to look at. We were second best physically on breaking ball. Dublin fully deserved their win. We'll have to have a look at it. A few obvious things that were off, we'll work on those. We'll train hard Tuesday. Dublin, he said, brought an intensity and a physicality that seemed to catch us by surprise. They were really good and bossed the game. So 112 to 7 points was the final score. Could have been a lot worse.
Could have been a lot worse. The one area, and I do feel I need to point it out, and his first game back in Croke Park, I thought Rob Henley was a credit to himself.
Mm. Seven saves he made.
Point blank. Like, we should have been beaten by 17 to 20 points if you want to calculate it from a degree. But the way he played from a man that had his first outing in Croke Park since the All-Ireland final catastrophe, everything, spot on, kick-outs, just top class.
If we're talking goalkeepers, by the way, for a second, Evan Comerford looked more comfortable. He had a tough day in Tralee.
Tralee.
Yeah.
Now, the whole thing is, he had a tough day in Tralee because he was targeted.
Mm.
His kickouts were purposefully targeted. Now, if we have 14 wides from a Mayo perspective, that's 14 opportunities that you know the ball is in the air and you actually push up, you set up from a shooting position, whether it's a 45, which we had, which frees, which we have, that's your chance to put the press on.
Yeah.
We didn't actually go what I would classes Mayo have always done, James Horne included, man to man. We still covered space. We covered more. We didn't really put the intensity up to Dublin.
The way Kerry did.
Yeah. And okay.
Why do you think that is, given that this Mayo team have had, for the first time in a long time, the bulk of a summer off.
They
don't have an All-Ireland final heartbreak to get over.
Yeah.
They're back training from October and training hard. Like, it is really striking that a Dublin team effectively still getting back off the plane.
And this
bossed
Dublin,
them physically.
It was a sloppy Dublin performance.
Mm.
And it's what happened to Mayo, it was a sloppy Dublin performance. But the thing is, you're trying to integrate a lot of new players in a system that wouldn't have had played before. And you're saying it's brave and it's needed.
Mm.
And we haven't done it enough in the past to integrate the likes of Kieran Tracy in the half-forward line, Fionn McDonagh. Mm. I think Brian Reap, he got the ball. His shot selection wasn't good, but you're going, if you can win it, you're halfway there.
So in your opinion, are Mayo using this as a learning experience for new players?
I would have said, bar Dermot O'Connor and Killian O'Connor, that would have, prior, like it's a long way from championship, prior to, that would be the championship team. The big difference this year, in the last three games versus last year, was Mayo were tight. They still have conceded less than anyone in Division 1. Mm. But there were plus 15, plus 16 coming in. So their defence wasn't leaking. Mm. But there was too many one-on-one situations. Guys were burnt. I'd like to see Keith Higgins playing in a more half-back, going forward role. They've been out and out. Because he offers so much as an attacking option. If you don't try and concentrate the opposition's thoughts on who's coming forward, when they're coming forward, it's too predictive. And a lot of the times that the Mayo team were, the half forward line were too far away from the inside forward line. Because it was not, more often than not, it was your half forward that was setting up. Like you have a new guy, I think he's a great prospect, and he put in a fair shift, a young Matthew Ruin in midfield with Donny Vaughan. But a lot of the time, your half forwards are giving your inside forwards the ball and they're too far away. So you're kind of we gotta create more shape, and there needs to be more unity between our full forward line and our half forward line. Because if Andy is getting the ball and Andy wins ball, by Jesus, he can turn backs inside out to win it. But then you're stagnant and you're going, where's the support coming, left or right? It's not as fluid enough. But from a Dublin perspective, two games in a row, you have Cormac Costello winning man of the match, fine performance. And again, you have, you know, the likes of Kieran Kilkenny to come back. Like for me, and it's look at, they have a fantastic panel and unit. But when you have Bernard Brogan not even tagged, Paul Flynn not seeing the light of day, no game time. Kevin McMenum, no game time. Michael Darragh came on. It's you go to yourself. It's working out good, and maybe that little advantage that's saying, right, our backs are to the wall, we've had two losses. But the big thing is, the destiny is still in Kerry and Mayo's hands. If Mayo beat Kerry and manage to win over Galway, they'll have the last game of the league against Monaghan to get to a league final, and because the fact that Dublin have lost two, it's out of their hands to get to the league final, if you know what I mean, because they're not playing. Yeah. They're not playing Kerry. So it's, you know what? It's whatever they do in Kerry, they can pick managers and they can pick young players.
That's true. And on Mayo's leaky defence on Saturday, which it hasn't been, as you're saying, thus far in the league, even take the Costello goal. So he's in a one-on-one with Keith Higgins for what feels like about 10 seconds before it goes by him. Keith Higgins gets no support and no cover from anyone. Even just that in a microcosm. You're scratching your head a little bit at that. You can't leave a player one-on-one for that long.
Well, the opposition wouldn't do it. If it was a scenario where you had a corner forward, Jason Doherty, facing up against and Johnny Cooper or Smalling him, he wouldn't be left. He wouldn't be left. And the thing is, sometimes you're going, it's not about, where do you, from a Mayo perspective, you're going, right, I want the player to be directed back into traffic. There's going to be somebody there to pick me up or help me up, or link with your midfielder to say to your halfback, step back, I'm covering, you need to float. It wasn't. And he was like, Keith Higgins is out and out, absolutely top, 150 caps. That was his 150th appearance. But again, it's not right. You're right, each man to himself. That's not the way football is played. You have to have somebody willing to say, to bust a gut, or even to gamble, saying, I have to, there's one-on-one here. You know who it is. You're going, these guys take it on.
It's an extraordinary thing to think Costello may still be impact sub come championship time. Enda McGinley has joined us. Enda, we're just beginning to wrap up on Dublin Mayo. In short, David Brady alongside me here says that even Dublin were a little bit sloppy and still they won well on the night and could have won by a whole lot more. That was his general summation of the game.
Yeah, it was pretty, I suppose, sobering for the rest of the country to see it, but also got used to the thing of Monaghan beating Dublin and then Kerry beating Dublin and thinking, God, this may be the year that Dublin's starting to show a chink in the armour. But unfortunately, the caveat always to that, and everybody was saying it at the time, that Dublin were rusty, they were just back from their holidays, they really probably hadn't done much training. And I suppose the return to the Croke Park, the nice surface, the posts that they're well familiar with, and you just seen the quality. I wasn't at the game myself, I watched it on TV, but a good friend of mine was at it, sitting behind the goals, and he just said, bottom line, Dublin's quality The quality of their players is on another level compared to any other team. And I suppose Kerry, now everybody's going to start pinning their hopes on Kerry, because looking at Mayo, it's very hard to see where they close that gap as the games get even faster heading into the summer and the firmer pitches, you know. So, yeah, it's pretty depressing for everybody else, really.
Yeah, sobering when you put it like that. I saw Tyrone got moving against Monaghan. Reading about this game, 116 to 12 points, there seemed to be an energy and a verve about Tyrone that we hadn't seen thus far.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Now, chatting to a couple of the men around the Tyrone squad, the Roscommon, I wasn't at the Roscommon game, but obviously I'd heard about it and read about it, and a draw against Roscommon, which they sort of got back into it, having been well down. It looked again just as if Tyrone were struggling to find form. A draw down there, it wasn't a particularly brilliant result, I suppose, from Tyrone's point of view. But by all accounts, actually, they started to play much, much better in that game. And the panel was much more confident coming away from that game than maybe a draw down there would have led you to believe. And then I think we've seen that push on against Monaghan. Now, you have to, there's some games come along and they paint you in a better light than what you really are, and they paint the opposition in a worse light what they really are. And I think that's the case from Saturday night's game. Monaghan played really poorly, particularly in the second half. They could not do anything right. Even every break ball or every wee ricochet, it went against them. They coughed up so much easy possession. Some of their big players, they were missing quite a few big players, and some of their other big players didn't play particularly well. Tyrone, on the other hand, they really started to click. Interestingly, Tyrone sort of early on in the season seemed to be going with a more almost natural formation. On Saturday night, they went back much more to a classic sort of counter-attacking formation. And with that, you had the switch of Petey Hart, where he had been essentially full forward in the first sort of 2-3 games. And he, along with the Tyrone team, was sort of doing okay, but just not finding his groove. He moved, and most of this game he played from half-back, and he just destroyed Monaghan almost on his own, but it was as part of Tyrone's old counter-attacking style. Mm. So from a Tyrone point of view, that counter-attacking style is still the one that suits them best.
Okay. In matters off the field, the GPA released a statement this evening. They're unhappy that their motion was defeated at Congress in Wexford on Saturday. They wanted a seat at the CCCC in a bid to try and sort out fixtures. And they've said involving players in the fixture-making process is recognised in many sports across the world, AFL, World Rugby. It's an effective means of delivering coherent programme of fixtures. They say it's an opportunity missed by the GAA, so the GPA not happy with that. And then it seems lots of people not happy with motion 39. So this was Donegal's motion. It was beaten on a 64% majority. And I had not thought that the wording of this motion beforehand was overly important, but it seems like it's the wording that's been used against Donegal here in a way which just seems deliberately pedantic. It's almost been used against them to defeat the motion. So their motion effectively was that any county in the Super 8s could not nominate Croke Park as a home venue. And Donegal made a point of not naming names. Clearly it was about Dublin, but they didn't want to make it about Dublin. Mick McGrath, the Donegal chairman, was an OTBAM this morning, and he said, "We weren't trying to move Dublin out for the O'Byrne Cup or the National League or the Leinster Championship or the All-Ireland semi-finals or finals. It was just the one game." Sean Kelly came on. He was one of the delegates against it, as was Tom Dempsey of Wexford and Meads, Francis Flynn. Sean Kelly was on this morning as well. And he said of the wording of the motion that it was written in a negative sense, because it said that no county could use Croke Park as their home venue. He said that's a negative. If it was approached in a different way, it may have got a different result. And he used the example, again, I don't know how realistic it is really, but that, say if a Kildare or a Mead were doing up Newbridge or Portalshan, that if this motion passed, they wouldn't be able to nominate Croke Park as a home venue for them while the work was being done. Grand, okay. But it struck me that the wording of this was used to defeat something which is just completely sensible, i.e. for the fairness and integrity of the competition, clearly your neutral venue cannot be the same as your home venue. And if they were of a mind to, Enda, they could have went outside and written a few better words on a piece of tissue and came back with something to that effect, i.e. it doesn't have to be you can't nominate Croke Park as your home venue, but let's just live in the real world here. Croke Park is clearly Dublin's home venue, so let's make the wording you can't have your neutral venue the same as your home venue, i.e. you know, if you're Galway, you can't say we're going to play our neutral game at Pearce Stadium. It seems like a no-brainer. And like Sean Kelly's point was almost like this morning, I didn't like it. It was like, well, we'll just have to come back in a year and you know, we'll have to see if we get the wording right then. This thing could have been sorted out in 5 minutes, and it was a little bit schleving.
That's if they wanted it sorted out.
Correct.
And I suppose my issue with Congress and that aspect of the GAA is that it's almost that it is that difficult to structure a motion appropriately, that the only ones that can structure it appropriately is the hardcore GAA themselves. Yeah. And their motions are always watertight. Like, the easiest thing would be to make an amendment and then let it go. But that said, it's off to next year. And Drone had a motion I would have been hugely in favour of in terms of underage. And effectively, it was doing away with the bad birthday, so there'd never be any more bad birthdays as such. But it got out because they said, well, we're working on something at the minute, so we want you to withdraw that. So again, the hardcore, yeah, it's like, in terms of a democracy, I'm not sure what it is, because the technical aspects of motion writing, and then if they see a motion like that, motions would have been submitted weeks ago. So if there was an issue with it, or if they thought, no, that's a good idea, but we need to rework that, we'll then get that done. But they leave it to the very, very last minute, just before the vote, until they sort of indicate them things. So I think it's a wee bit of behind the back play by the GAA. They know the motions they want to get through, and they know how to get them through. And even they still run at a difficulty like that. But certainly a county trying to come with a bright idea on their own on a solo run, it's going to be a difficult place. And unfortunately, what looks like a very sensible idea in terms of trying to minimise Dublin's advantage, and that isn't going to say that Dublin's beat. But let's be frank, for me, Dublin, Croke Park is worth at least 3 to 4 points in any game to Dublin. So that's not to say Dublin's going to lose. They beat most teams by a heck of a lot more than that. But at least the teams that are getting there and almost there, that's just another thing that weighs on the benefit of Dublin, that frankly, they're that good of a team, they don't need that benefit at the minute.
There's a few things, other things that jump out at me, David, and then you come in and give us your broad take on things. I'm not sure how much a lot of counties and their delegates care about this issue, because they might be hurling counties, they might be counties that will never be in the Super 8s, and what's more important to them is staying in cahoots with GAA and getting money for their developments and their various bits and pieces. So you can see how the GAA managed to get 64% majority, that's one. And then what I'm seeing thrown around a lot is, well, you can't play a big game, say a Mayo Dublin at Parnell Park. Like, I sort of agree with that, because there's not enough people. However, let's be real, Dublin's home venue is Croke Park, and then just ask Dublin to nominate a neutral venue that will fit 30, 40,000 in it, that's nearby, and then you get a good compromise. And I don't understand how we're in this point.
Look, I had a conversation with Alan Brogan yesterday. I have my opinion, and I wouldn't want to play Dublin anywhere else if I was playing and when I was playing. That's
Croke Park.
Yes.
That's a personal thing, though. Let's talk about the fairness and the integrity of the competition.
The fairness is there's going to be circumstances. There's going to be circumstances. Like, there was 36,000 people in Croke Park for a National League game in February. Mm-hmm. So why you have to mitigate against these things? Why cut your nose off to spite your face? I would say, right, there needs to be balance.
Can I answer that very quickly? You cut your nose off because you have to be fair to the players who are in this competition. I think duty number one, if you are the GAA and you're organising a competition, duty number one is fairness. And then I understand there's commercial aspects. So the second option then is, fair enough, let's not have it in Parnell Park. Dublin's home game is Croke Park. And then let's agree as a compromise on a neutral venue that is 40,000. And okay, it might be 10,000 or 15,000 who don't quite get in, but 40,000 is a good compromise. And crucially, it's fair to all the players. Why should Dublin get two games in their home venue? And let's not pretend for a second their home venue is Parnell Park.
Is it the 30 players on the pitch that matter, or is it the 60,000 people that are going to the game? So we're
the 30 players, I would argue, in this instance.
I don't agree. I think that if you're stopping, or you're saying to 15,000 people that want to go, and look, maybe they are Dublin supporters, but I know, I come from a county that's so well supported too. And if I knew that there was 500 people that couldn't go to a game, which was like it this year in Newbridge or nowhere, it was a disgrace. So you're going, how do you mitigate it? So
I've just given you a pretty good solution.
But
is that not a pretty good solution?
Where's your 40,000? Where's your 40,000 Cedar Stadium in Portlaoise. There's not 40,000 there in Portlaoise. There's not 30,000. Mm. Between safety and guidelines, there should be to say, right, there needs to be a fixed time that if Dublin do not have a stadium of their own within the next 5 years, well then...
That's a waste of money. Surely that's a waste of money. For Dublin to go and build a 40,000-seater stadium for one game a year in the Super 8s, that must be a waste of money.
For one game? Two games? National League game?
Maybe National Curry. League. Maybe National League.
You know, you go to yourself...
It's a lot of money, though. You know, and like Waterford don't even have a ground.
Tell Mayo about it. Tell the O'Connor Park and Tullamore about it. Tell the guys down in Antrim the state of the pitch.
Yeah,
it's a lot of money, but you have to be saying, you know what? Don't piggyback on the back of your own success to a degree, because you're going, by Jesus, they can well afford it, and if they can't afford it, you have to burst your arse and fundraise for it, and that's what other counties have to do.
Mm.
If you can bring a million in as a county. And a county down the west of Ireland that hasn't got the industry or financial clout. And if you're going to bring in 57,000 versus a million, you're going. The question is, this you need to do it,
yeah,
and that's where the discussion needs.
No,
to be.
Maybe I wouldn't agree that it's the best use of GAA money, and you can only fundraise so far. There's another solution here. There must be. And on David's point, so. The responsibility he feels is maybe towards the 60, 70,000 who might want to go see a game above the 30 players, the fairness for the two squads. Where are you in that point?
No, I would be more in the fact that the competition bottom line has to be fair. I think if we're worried just totally about the crowds coming to the matches, well, the longer that Dublin, and we seen it last year, the longer that Dublin's complete dominance continues, the crowds are losing interest. Even the Dubs themselves are losing interest. So whenever things are tight, and like you can take any big sports events, there is always a limit to the number of tickets. And I think that sparks interest of itself. Like they were talking in Casement Park, they were talking about building maybe a 40,000-seater stadium. And thankfully, I think at the minute, either due to the planning battle, it's come down more to maybe the high 20s. And I'd be far happier with that, where there's a limit to the tickets and there are more people then. As soon as you've got a limited number of things, more people are automatically interested in going. But in terms of the competition and the fairness of the competition, I just think it isn't fair that Dublin are just so at home in Croke Park. I played Dublin Croke Park, probably the best atmospheres I ever played in as a player, and that's including the All-Ireland finals, was the games against Dublin, because it's so partisan. I beat Dublin in Croke Park, and they were some of the best memories and some of the best games we played in. So from what David's saying, absolutely, if you're going to beat Dublin, then play them there. But taking that out of it, you can't leave it up to teams, because as soon as you're saying offering a team, right, well, if you want Dublin to move out of Croke Park, they have to. That's immediately putting a sort of a psychological onus on a team. Well, what are you afraid of playing them in Croke Park? So I think it's a simple rule that you shouldn't have two home games. You're supposed to have one home game, and if Dublin's then is in it, then they need to take a game out. Then they need to take a game out of Croke Park.
Can I ask you, and as you go on, right, how do you minimise or how do you come to a compromise? Because we don't seem to do it in GA. Like from that statement there from the GPA, I think they should, as to compromise. They say, look, we're a part of this.
I like it's outrageous they don't have a seat.
Yeah, and you're going, but I don't know. Like you go, learn from your mistakes. Mm. Like why was it, they should, but would you have? And you're going, that's a whole set of rules. You're going, if it happens that in this year, 2019, you mm-hmm. play Dublin in the Super 8s and you're drawn in the same group against them in 2020, you have two home games.
There's any number of solutions.
Is that not fair?
Well, it depends going, how you word it. As Donegal have found out, fair costs, you need to word it damn well.
I know that from a Donegal context, you need to word things well. But it's, you're going, is it all right? If it actually happens, and you know, they have, if you play the Super 8s this year.
Your point is, if you, in your neutral game, have to play Dublin at Croke Park, then you could put in a clause whereby when you play them again the following year in the Super 8s, the neutral game is back in your
so
place.
So you get two shots of the title.
It's a working solution. It's not ideal. But
would you be against it from a Dublin country? You're going, well, no. You know what? It kind of minimises.
Because what I didn't like was, so it seems John Costello in Dublin, you know, one of in his speech, he said the motion was divisive and mean-spirited, but he also really played up the financial loss to the GAA. You know, if you move us from Croker to Parnell, think of the financial loss. That's not how we should be judging this situation, Enda.
Yeah, and I think he came out with another classic line that I giggled at. He said, well, nobody was complaining of this back in the 80s and 90s, or 80s and 90s, whenever Dublin weren't being as all-dominant as what they are now. Well, plenty of things have changed in them 20 years, including the amount of money that Dublin have got into their system that might have a role to play in their current level of dominance. So John Costello saying that, well, people weren't complaining 20 years ago. Well, things are very different on a large number of ways at the minute. In terms of him saying it was mean-spirited, I don't think it was. I think it was a sensible thing from Donegal. Donegal paid the brunt of it last year.
Have you ever seen the BBC show where the man's daughter comes into the room?
And she's eating a bag of crisps. They look like, and you know what? They're a monster munch because she's licking her fingers.
Oh, she's coming again. Come back.
She's licking her fingers.
Hey,
how you doing?
A wave.
How's things?
Hi.
Up Tyrone. They're nice scripts.
For the radio audience watching,
sorry.
We presume Enda McGinley's daughter's just come in and started waving behind him on his Skype connection. She's gone now. Even she's sick of Dublin and Crow Park.
She actually says she was agreeing with you there.
Sorry, I'll let you finish that point if you can remember where you were.
No, in terms of John Costello and saying about the trying to milk that thing about the amount of money they create for Croke Park, again, Dublin need to be careful, because if we just keep ploughing, creating money, and money's the main thing, and then we keep ploughing that a lot of that money back into Dublin, and this is a great friendship there, because we need a strong Dublin, and a strong Dublin creates more money, and if we've more money, let's invest plenty in Dublin and keep Dublin. Then the interest in the Gaelic Championship is going downhill at the minute.
Yeah.
There's plenty of interest this year, querying the five in a row, but if that keeps going, where do we go then? So Dublin needs its competitors to be strong and to be competitive. A better championship like the Hurling Championship will drive interest, and that will drive money. So anything we can have to level the playing field and have more teams realistically competitive with Dublin, that will be the making of the Gaelic Championship. Not about how much money Dublin can create for the Gaelic Championship. Yeah, it's about all the other teams too.
I would tend to agree. And what's more, we must put it to John Costello at the end of the year. Let's see how many people turn up for this neutral game against Dublin as well, because 2018 would suggest it was not a full house. We'll have to leave it there. Enda McGinley, thank you. David Brady, pleasure having you in studio.
Pleasure,
this evening,
John. Sir. Thanks, man.
We'll see you soon. All right, short break. GAA on Off the Ball.